Good evening and welcome to the Michigan Science Fiction Writers Series, sponsored by Libraries Computing and Technology. This evening I'm pleased to introduce horror fantasy writer Stephen Lee Clymer. Steve has been writing stories for most of his life. There usually isn't a time when he's not working on something, even if it's just staring out the window. During bouts of writer's block, perhaps?
No, just working.
His novels include Dream Thieves, Bear Walker, Soul Temple, and M, and his short stories have appeared in over a dozen magazines, including Implosion, Altered Perceptions, and Fright Night. Recently, Steve sold the motion picture rights to his novel Demonesque to After Dark Productions of Los Angeles, so we might be seeing his work on the big screen before long. Currently, Steve serves as the Dean of Developmental Education at Baker College in Allen Park, and he is a PhD candidate in English composition at Wayne State University. He certainly is a busy guy, so I'm happy that he could join us tonight. Now, please help me welcome Stephen Lee Clymer.
Thank you, everybody. Please, settle down. Today I was going to read from my children's series called Pieces of the World, and the first book is M, and it came out last year, and the second book in the series is Infinite Keep, which is up here, and it's in the blue cover, and I just finished the third installment and shipped it off to my editor, and it should be out this summer. So, and that book is called Lighthouse Rock. So I will read now from Pieces of the World, M. Chapter 1, Hideous Hilda Hoffman. To my understanding, every neighborhood had one, an old lady who lived alone and had a bunch of cats. We had Hilda. At least for a while we had Hilda. I think I was the only one who noticed, but I'm a little nosy. I don't think I'm nosy. I simply like to know what's happening in my neighborhood. I think I was the only one who paid attention to her. I mean, I didn't go over to her house and talk to her. I just merely kept my eyes open. Then one day, I noticed there was no activity going on around her house. She lived in a small bungalow in the middle of our block of houses that looked more or less the same. The grass at her house grew unruly, and the flowers she had in pots along the fence separating her yard from my best friend Zoe's house got leggy. Still, I seemed to be the only one who noticed Hilda was not around anymore. She was dead. That was my first thought. That was all I needed, a dead old lady in my neighborhood. And since I didn't seem, since it didn't seem anyone else was interested, I took it upon myself to do some investigating. So Zoe and I walked down to Hilda's old house and looked through the windows. It was empty. Hilda must have moved during the night when no one was paying attention. I was sure I would have noticed it, but I guess I'm not as nosy as I think I am. Anyway, Hilda was gone and her house just sat empty for the first part of the summer. Everyone else in the neighborhood lost interest. Even I lost some interest when there was something cool to do, but I couldn't ever shake the distant feeling of Hilda. I'd spoken to her a bunch of times, and she wasn't hideous at all. Sure, she was frail and stooped, and she had a big mole on her cheek with a hair sprouting from it, but my own Aunt Sally had that. I thought Hilda was kind, and as I think back, I don't even know if Hilda was her name. The kids in the neighborhood started calling her that. To be entirely truthful, we didn't know a lot about our neighbor at all. One day, feeling a little curious again, I got up off the swing of the front porch and started to walk. I thought just one extra peek inside Hilda's windows wouldn't hurt. Perhaps I missed something. Maybe I'd try a door, too. As I walked the distance of about 7 houses to Hilda's, I started to feel a knot in my stomach. Something chilly was in the air, something I had never felt before while looking at Hilda's. Her house was on the other side of the street from my house, and I was looking headlong into the weedy front yard. By myself, I wasn't nearly as brave as I was when I was with Zoe. It indeed looked abandoned, but where did she go? People don't just vanish into thin air. Something had to have happened. Everyone goes somewhere. I crossed the street and pushed open the squeaky front gate of the house. Long grass that had gone to seed waved like an ocean, and weeds crept over the cracked cement of the walk. I strained to see through the windows in case there was something I had missed. Then my foot hit the first step of the porch. I went up and knocked on the door in case any neighbors were watching. They wouldn't think I was up to something if I was knocking on the door. I fully expected no answer, and that's surely what I got. Feeling a little more confident, I went to one of the side windows and peered inside. The old lace curtains, faded from the sun, couldn't hide the emptiness I saw. There was dust on the floor, some old newspapers, and bits of grime I couldn't recognize. No one had lived here in quite some time. Through the window, I could see clear through to the other side of the house. There was a back window with no curtains, for I could see the overgrown garden. I decided I needed just one more look to feel satisfied that hideous Hilda Hoffman wasn't dead and rotting in my neighborhood. I jumped off the side of the porch and made my way around the side of the house. I could hear my dad's voice in my head begging me to stop acting like such a tomboy and be more ladylike. I was getting too old for skin knees and kick the can. 13 was too old for these things. Hardly. Who wants to be in a dress all day long, primping and wearing makeup? That was Zoe's department. If my dad knew what the kids at school, me included, thought of the girls that wore makeup and skimpy clothes, he'd no doubt rethink the ladylike phrase. They look stupid, and they just stood around and never did anything. And if he were around more, maybe I'd be more ladylike. I forgot about my dad the instant I made my way back into Hilda's wild garden. Garden was an understatement. It looked like an overgrown meadow with spooky, gnarled trees running all the way up to the heavy tree line in the back. I had no idea Hilda's backyard was bigger than the rest of everyone's on the block. At least it was bigger than mine. Then I felt the wind pick up. It was like ice running down my back, and I thought I smelled the ocean or a lake for a second. The wind rustled the twisted trees, and I saw something dart quickly behind a mound of small rocks. It must have been a rat or an animal, I told myself. Spooked, I quickly backed out of the garden and decided to head for home. I forgot about looking in the back window, for something in the way the wind was blowing told me I shouldn't be there. The wind whistled through the gnarled trees, sounding peculiarly like tiny laughing voices. I hurried up to get out of the garden before my imagination got the best of me. With my heart beating faster and faster, I waded through the tall grass of the front yard and closed the gate behind me. When I got home, Mom was in the kitchen making fish sticks. I could smell them from the street. Yuck, fish sticks again. She only made them for Eric, my little brother, because he liked them. And he was a big pain. His presence made me forget about my visit to Hilda's. Mom, Em's home, Eric yelled accusingly. I heard the door, Eric, Mom replied in her typically exhausted tone. Emily Time, I would like to speak to you. Yeah, I said as innocently as possible, knowing I was in trouble. Mom pulled the fish sticks out of the oven and put them on the stove next to a pot of instant mashed potatoes. I told you to stay in the house and watch your brother until I got home. But Mom, you were coming home in a few minutes anyway. What could he have done? Mom and I both looked at Eric, who was grinning mischievously. He's almost 12. When do I get to stop babysitting him? I don't need a babysitter, Eric added sullenly. Yes, you do, Mom said while putting the food on the table. Em, I don't have time to keep up with him and my work schedule. I need you to help me out until I get home from work, and then you can play with your friends or read your books or do whatever you want to do. But Mom, I tried to protest, but the tired look in her eyes made me stop. Okay, I can wait till you get home. Thanks, sweetie. Mom gave me a quick smile and a soft kiss. Now let's eat. We all sat down, filled our plates, and began to eat. Eric and I gave our daily reports on how our days were, but Mom kind of changed the subject when I asked her how her work went. Eric and I knew how hard Mom worked for us and how much she cared, but it would be nice to see her rest every now and then. Mom, I said, can I ask you a question? Sure, Em, what is it? Do you know what happened to the old lady who used to live about seven houses down and across the street? Hideous Hilda Hoffman? Eric laughed and screwed up his face. You don't even know if that's her name, I scolded. Mom was thinking, but I couldn't be sure if it was about my question or something else. She thought about so much stuff all the time. I can't say that I do, she finally answered, pushing her dark hair out of her tired eyes. Why? Well, it's just that her house has been sitting vacant for months. No one seems to remember ever seeing her leave. I went down and looked in the windows. I stopped, realizing I had revealed something I shouldn't have. Mom was smart and caught it right away. Have you been poking around an abandoned house? Not poking around. I made guilty circles in my mashed potatoes with my fork. I was keeping an eye out. Well, you keep your eyes at home and not on some abandoned house, she said. Those places are dangerous. You never know what could be going on inside. I thought of the chilly feeling and the quick flash of motion in the back garden when she said that. A shadow of the same uneasiness came to my spine, but I shrugged it off. It was nothing but my overactive imagination at work. "Promise me you'll stay away from that house," Mom looked directly into my eyes. I crossed my fingers under the table. "I promise." "Good. Now what else has been going on?" She nudged the potatoes and fish around her plate, not really eating all that much. "Nothing," Eric said with the dull boredom of summer's end. "I can't wait for school to start tomorrow," I said, knowing Eric was thinking the same thing. "I know it's been an awful summer, Em, and I'm sorry," Mom said. "I can't control your father, and I'm sorry he changed his plans on the two of you. I know you didn't want to be stuck around here with me working so much." "It's okay, Mom," I said, hoping to make everyone feel a little better. Everyone finished dinner, and I cleared the table. It was Eric's job to load the dishwasher, but more often than not, he got away with not doing it. Tonight, though, he felt the heaviness in the air when Mom talked about Dad, so he did it. I went outside and watched the activity on the street. Kids were riding bicycles, and families were doing all the typical summer stuff. In the sky, clouds were being stained purple by the setting sun, and the sliver of a new moon was visible. I thought of the moon and how interesting it must have looked. How interesting it must have been to look at it for the first time through a telescope like Galileo. I watched the moon for a few more minutes, but my eyes kept falling from the sky onto the abandoned house below. The wind blew the chill in my bones again. Chapter 2, Zoe in the Morning. It was time. I had my lunch bag, a notebook, and some pencils all in my backpack. Although it was light on my shoulders now, I knew by the end of the day it would be stacked full of heavy books for me to lug around. I had on just a pair of jeans and a top, nothing fancy, but I still looked okay for school. Eric, on the other hand, looked like a slob. He had on his grubbiest jeans, and Mom told him to change his stained Detroit Red Wings t-shirt before he left for the bus. She had to go to work before the bus came, and it was my responsibility to get us on the bus, but not to make sure his clothes were changed. I laughed to myself, hoping he'd get in trouble. Eric ran ahead to meet up with his annoying friends at the bus stop, which was about two houses past Zoe's. That meant I would have to walk past the abandoned house if I wanted to ride the bus to school. I watched the house carefully as I approached it, taking note of any changes. The lawn was still bushy and overgrown, and there was no activity at all inside. As I slowly walked past the house and into the range of Zoe's house, she came thundering out the door with a big grin on her face. She had been at her dad's house the last 2 weeks and only came home late last night, well past my bedtime. We were so happy to see each other. She had a new short haircut with summery highlights and wore the current trend in clothes. Her mother would not have it any other way. "Zoe," I smiled as she joined me. "Em," she replied enthusiastically. "I thought I was going to miss the bus. I got back from my dad's so late. It was nearly 11 p.m. "Well, you didn't miss the bus," I replied as the big yellow behemoth came lurching around the distant corner. "So what's up?" asked Zoe. "What did you do for the last 2 weeks?" "I did nothing but babysit," I glared at Eric as he chatted with his group of troublemakers. "I can't believe we're starting school already," Zoe said as we walked. "Summer just flew by." "Not for me," I grumbled. "First my dad backs out on our vacation plans, and I get stuck babysitting Eric Jr. What a turd." Zoe laughed, and so did I. We continued to talk as we waited for the bus, and I ignored Eric and his hoodlum skater buddies as best I could. Some of them, though, looked almost cute. Too bad they were hanging out with my brother. The bus screeched to a painful-sounding halt in front of us, and the kids began to trickle on board. The bus driver, Miss Jensen, who insisted we call her Barb, knew all of us by name and made a point of greeting everyone by first name and last. "Good morning, Zoe Mortensen. Nice to see you again," Barb said. "Morning, Barb," Zoe replied and moved past to find us a seat. I was last getting on the bus. "And good morning to you, Emily Time. How was your summer?" "Good morning," I replied. "And how was your summer?" Barb repeated as if I hadn't heard her. I had heard her. I wasn't deaf. Why was everyone concerning themselves with the level of my happiness I had over the summer? Maybe they all knew I was miserable, and they just liked to hear it over and over. "It wasn't bad," I finally said and quickly took my seat before she could ask anything else. The doors closed with a hydraulic hiss, and Barb put the bus in motion. We headed for the next stop. As we drove down the street, we passed the bungalow of Hideous Hilda Hoffman. I was on the inside seat next to the aisle, busily noticing what everyone else was doing, where they were sitting, and envisioning what new cliques were being formed or revived. "Hey, look, a stray cat," Zoe pointed out of the window. "It's on Hideous Hilda's front porch. I wonder what it's doing there. I instantly looked out the window and caught a fleeting glimpse as we went past. There was a cat on the porch, a big orange tomcat. He seemed to be scratching at the door, but I couldn't be sure. The bus pulled out of range. Chapter 3, A River of Cats. The school day dragged on and on. At least Zoe and I were in the same homeroom, but we only had one other class together, and that was math. Luckily, I was good in math and enjoyed it, but Zoe hated it. The other classes I had were all okay. I had some teachers I liked and some I didn't. We had a new English teacher named Mr. Hoskins, who was actually British. He was also fresh out of college and really passionate about books. All the girls in class were practically drooling over him and his accent. Well, I found it cool. I found him okay for a teacher. I wasn't going silly over him like the others were. At lunchtime, that's all Zoe wanted to talk about, Mr. Hoskins. I, on the other hand, couldn't shake the image of the big orange cat on hideous Hilda's front porch. The bus ride home was like lunch period. Zoe wanted to talk about nothing but Mr. Hoskins and his literature class. Somehow I got the feeling she was going to do really well in that subject this year. I liked it, but it was nothing compared to science. I lucked out and got chemistry and biology this year. My textbooks were brand new, and I was the first to have them. We got off the bus, and I said goodbye to Zoe. I told her to call me later. Eric and I walked at the same pace, side by side, without saying much. We happened to be going in the same direction, that was all. I was still mad at him for being a pain in my backside all summer. Hopefully he'd grow up some this year and I wouldn't have to be his babysitter. Then we walked closer to Hilda's old house. I slowed, but Eric kept walking. I scanned the porch and heavy grass for any signs of the cat, but didn't see anything. Before I knew it, I was at a full stop, staring at the abandoned house, and Eric was quickly pulling away from me. "You're so weird about that house," he yelled back at me. "I'm telling Mom." His threat shocked me back to reality, and I ran to catch up with him. "Tell her what? Me and Zoe saw a cat there this morning, and I was seeing if it was still there." "Whatever," Eric crossed the street as I did. "I swear, Eric, if you don't stop bugging me, I'm going to beat the crap out of you." Eric knew he was getting older and bigger and laughed. "You and what army?" "You're a dork," I grumbled as we walked in the door nearly simultaneously. Mom wasn't home from work yet, so I went to the dry erase board to see what instructions she had left. The crock pot was on and it smelled so good. She was making a pot roast with carrots, potatoes, and onions. It would be delicious, and it meant that I didn't have to start dinner. I already had homework, thanks to Mr. Hoskins. It would be boring, no doubt. I also had chemistry reading to do, and that would be exciting. So I pulled myself up to the kitchen table and began to do my homework while Eric ran off to his room to play video games. Not long after I started reading my English homework, I like to do the boring stuff first and get it out of the way, Mom came home from work. She looked tired and was lugging a few bags of groceries. I got up to help her with them. "Thanks, sweetie," she said gratefully. "There are a few more in the car if you don't mind getting them. My feet are killing me." "No problem," I said, and went outside and got them. When I returned, Mom was getting herself a glass of water and taking off her high heels. "How was the first day of school?" "Not bad," I said. "Zoe and I are in homeroom together, and we have one class together." "That's nice," she smiled. "The gruesome twosome together again." "Yeah," I replied. "We have a new English teacher named Mr. Hoskins. He's from England." "Well, that's interesting," Mom replied while scanning the kitchen and living room. "Where's your brother?" "Playing stupid video games in his room," I said, hoping he would get in trouble for not doing his homework, but Mom didn't follow up on it. "I want to get to bed early because I have to be in at work for a meeting by 8 o'clock. I'm going to need your help to get Eric out of the house on time so you two won't miss the bus." "Okay," I agreed dully, not really wanting to be responsible for Eric again. Mom was so tired, though. "You tell him not to be a pain and listen to me. I promise," she said and gave me a kiss on the forehead. "You're such a good helper to me." "When will Eric be old enough to watch out for himself?" I asked. Mom sighed, knowing Eric needed to be more responsible for himself. "I'll talk to him, and I'll ask your father to talk to him too." "Thanks," I smiled and hugged her. We ate dinner, and Eric was actually tolerable. He was a good student if he put his mind to it, and from the way he talked about his classes, he seemed really interested this year. Maybe he was growing up. I told the story again about Zoe and her new love, Mr. Hoskins, and we all had a good laugh about it. Then it was time to clean up and finish homework. I decided to finish my chemistry reading in my room. Eric had moved out to the kitchen table to do his to do his and was irritating me. It was getting late, though, and he'd be going to bed soon, and I was getting tired myself. I loved my room. It wasn't a room like Zoe's or any other girly room, for that matter. I wasn't wasting good wall space on some singing group or a bunch of sappy unicorns. I had a map of the world on my wall, with pushpins strategically placed in all the cities I would one day visit. I also had a globe that my dad had given me for Christmas last year, and I loved it. It wasn't one with blue oceans, but an old-style one in colors of browns and tans. When I looked at it, I envisioned myself traveling in some faraway place like Hong Kong or Switzerland. I sighed, flopping down on my bed with my chemistry book. The reading was a little dry at first, but it got going once it started talking about chemical reactions and related stuff. I barely noticed that my mom had turned off the lights, stuck her head in to say goodnight, and headed off to bed. That meant Eric was in bed, too. I yawned and thought about the day's events. Closing my book, I got up off the bed and went to my window. My room faced the street, and if I strained my eyes, I could see a portion of hideous Hilda's house. The overgrown trees of her lot made the view difficult, but for an instant, I thought I saw a light in one of the windows. Suddenly, I felt a rush of adrenaline. I wasn't tired or sleepy anymore. There was a light on in the abandoned house. I rushed quietly to my closet and dug out my old pair of camping binoculars. Then I went to my window and opened it. Although our house only had one story, it was quite a drop out the front if one wasn't careful. I had climbed in and out of the window at least 100 times, but it took finesse to do it quietly. I balanced myself on the edge and leaned out as far as I could. I had to see. I had to make sure it wasn't just my imagination. With one hand stabilizing myself against the frame, I focused the field glasses with my other hand. I was wobbly, but I was able to point them in the right direction until I was on Hilda's. There was something more strange than a light on in the house. Stray cats were streaming to the house like fish swimming upstream. There were dozens of all kinds, and I even recognized a few of the pets of friends. Something was calling them, compelling them to go to the old bungalow. That is so weird, I whispered to myself while still watching. I had to see more. Simply sitting on my windowsill and observing the strangeness was not enough. Something was going on. Something was in there. Maybe Hilda had returned. Surely it wasn't robbers because there was nothing but dust and trash. I had to see more. I had to know what was going on at the abandoned house of hideous Hilda Hoffman. Going back to my closet, I got my flashlight. Then, ever so carefully, I lowered myself out of the window and onto the ground below. Ooh. Since I forgot what chapter I'm on, I'll just say the chapter title instead of The Lost Garden. Chapter 4. I kept the shadows of the neighbors' houses, making sure I wasn't seen. If Mom happened to look out her window, I wanted to see nothing but an empty sidewalk. I would be in so much trouble if I got caught sneaking out at night, much less to the abandoned house. But it wasn't abandoned anymore, of that I was sure. I watched as a few more neighborhood cats walked through the front gate or jumped over the fence to get on the property. Then, right in front of me, I saw the big orange cat from earlier in the morning come out of the bushes of the Andersons' home. I decided to follow him. At first, I thought he was heading up to the house with the others, but instead he headed for the back of the house. Torn on which way to go, I scurried across the street as quickly as I could. It would be less suspicious if I investigated from the backyard. There was less chance of anyone seeing my flashlight from the tangle of the garden. I decided to follow the big orange cat into the back garden. He slipped effortlessly through the dense foliage of hedges, but it was more difficult for me to find a suitable place to get in. I walked as inconspicuously as possible, yet carefully inspecting the hedges and old fencing for a suitable passage. I heard a car coming down the street. I had to get in before I was seen, or it may be too late. No one could see me or know that I was sneaking around old hideous Hilda's Hoffman's house. Then, just as luck would have it, I found an area in the shrubbery with a curiously bent branch that created a hole large enough for me. Frantically, I pushed my leg through the leaves and felt the surrounding branches scratch my skin. I had to keep going. The car was getting closer. In another few seconds, its headlights would fall upon me with my body hanging out of the garden of an abandoned house. That wouldn't look too good, especially if I ended up knowing the person in the car. Worse, they could know my mother and call her. I pushed myself hard and fell through the hole that seemed to close up right behind me. I felt the leaves and branches tighten as I tumbled to the ground with my flashlight still off. I heard it thumping away from me in the dark, in the dark garden just as the car passed by. My heart was pounding inside my chest and sweat dampened my skin even though the night was chilly. I paused for a moment to get my bearings and let my eyes adjust to the much darker garden. It looked a lot wilder than I remembered from earlier, but that was in the daylight. I reasoned it would naturally look more menacing in the darkness. I saw the big orange cat again. He seemed to be waiting for me and started walking as soon as he saw I was up and about. I felt on the ground in the general direction of where my flashlight fell until my fingers came in contact with the metal casing. I flicked the switch several times, but the beam failed to light. The fall must have broken it. It was useless to me. I stood as tall as I could to see as much as possible. I was in the garden, well past the rocks and gnarled trees. I was quite near the back of the property where the trees closed ranks in density. And try as I might, I couldn't see the house. The garden seemed to be much larger and deeper than I'd realized. Part of me wanted to go back onto the sidewalk and take my chances, while another part of me wanted to traverse the back garden to the house. How far could it be? The lot wasn't that big. The only reason I couldn't see the house was because it was dark as well. Perhaps there wasn't a light on after all. It could have been a reflection of car lights or just my imagination. I decided I had to know for sure, and staying in the garden was certainly the least conspicuous way of going about it. My eyes had adjusted, and I could make out the shadows of trees. Nervously, I began to walk in what I thought was the correct direction. Around me, I heard noises. It was probably just some more cats or skunks or something. I rationalized that it couldn't be anything scary like wolves or worse. I kept moving but fell more and more lost. After what felt like 10 minutes, I stopped. I had to get my bearings. I looked up at the stars, found the Big Dipper. I roughly knew what part of the sky it was in, but I couldn't exactly be sure. I looked back to see if I could see the streetlights, but the density of the garden seemed to grow even more. I was in the dark. Suddenly, I heard what I thought was tiny laughter. I paused to listen and even held my breath. There it was again. I was positive it was laughter. I crept in the direction of the voice, which had now been joined by another and another. There was now a tiny conversation as well as joyful titters, and it was all coming from behind an overgrown clump of bushes. Cautiously, I peered around the side of the foliage, and minuscule lights flirting up and down among a bunch of unruly flowering shrubs met my eyes. I gasped audibly as the sight of tiny glowing winged people busily clearing weeds and scrub. They apparently were having a great time of it, too. They must have heard me, for they all paused and looked directly at me. Frozen, we both sat staring at one another. Then we screamed. I tumbled backward from the bushes, and they extinguished their lighted bodies and streaked off through the garden in all directions. I was rattled, but my curiosity was out of control. Were those fairies? It had to be. They were too big to be lightning bugs, and besides, lightning bugs don't laugh and clean up the yard. Just then, the big orange cat appeared again. Somehow, I knew I was supposed to be following him. I got up off the ground, picked up my useless flashlight, and began to follow him through the garden. He picked a fairly direct path, and inside my body, I could feel we were going north. Every time he changed direction, I could feel it exactly. I knew when we jogged to the east or the west. I never felt something like that before. It was odd yet interesting, and it made my stomach flutter a bit. At last, the back of the house came into view. The garden seemed so deep and impenetrable, but that was impossible. The lot was just like everyone else's. I turned around and looked at the path we'd taken. The garden seemed deep and endless to me. The cat continued to walk, joining about 15 gathering near the back of the house. That's when I saw it. There was a light inside the house. There was more than one, too. I could also hear someone singing, and a woman's voice, and the swooshing of a broom on the floor. Maybe Hilda wasn't dead or missing. What if she came back? What if someone else had moved in? The house never had a for sale sign in front, and no one ever visited that I saw. I had to get a closer look. I kept my eyes alert to anything moving as I crept up to the back porch. With my foot, I had to shoo a few cats. I tried the door and, to my surprise, found it unlocked. The woman was still humming and singing peacefully while cleaning. I could smell the dust in the air. The big orange cat slipped inside as I opened the door. I was determined to get a look at Hilda or whomsoever was sweeping and cleaning up. My heart was thumping and my breath was coming in pants because of all the excitement. What if it was a stranger who was up to no good? Could I get away in time? What did all these cats want? There were so many thoughts rushing around in my brain that I could barely keep them straight. Concentrate, Em, I told myself. Pay attention to what you're doing and what's going on around you. I learned that from my dad. Suddenly, the sweeping stopped. The person in the other room came walking in my direction. I froze in place, my feet cemented to the floor. I couldn't move. I clutched my flashlight, ready to hit anyone who came in. Then around me, dozens of candles popped to life, giving the room an eerie yet warm glow. The sound was like a firecracker. No one had lit them, and they weren't electric. I didn't even notice the candles until they sprang to life on their own. I thought I heard someone, the voice that was singing said. What's a little girl doing on my back porch this late at night? I guess I'll stop there. Oh. Thank you very much.
I have a few questions.
Okay.
Well, why do a juvenile literature series?
Because of my daughters and because I love it. There's nothing like writing young adult fantasy books because I can do anything that I want in young adult books and children's books. Things that I can't get away with in an adult fantasy or horror book because people would go, that's stupid, that would never happen. But I can do anything I want in young adult. And so that's the reason I work in both genres, but I really have a passion for young adult fantasy.
Did you settle on a female protagonist for this series in part because of your daughters?
Yes. The qualities that Em and Zoe have throughout the entire series are the qualities that I want my daughters to grow up with and have, which is independence, never giving up, being just as strong as the guys and being able to really succeed. And that's why they're the heroes of the book. It's a quintology. There's five. There's five. I just finished number three. I already know how it's going to end. I've already finished the rough draft of number four, and five is going to be something else altogether to write. That's going to be a blast.
Any more questions? Well, thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.